You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Wednesday episode, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. We're going to be kind of an interesting one here. Going to wrap up Monday's analysis, Seattle's win over Philadelphia, and start moving forward to Sunday's Week 13 matchup against a surging New York Giants squad that has won three straight games. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season will be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day no matter how you watch. Whether you're watching from the press box like me or from the comfort of your own home, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day, because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game. It's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Usually we would have had our injury updates on yesterday's show, but since the Seahawks played on Monday night, there were certainly some scares out there. Most notably, Carlos Dunlap had an MRI on his foot yesterday, and as well as he's played for the Seahawks since they acquired him from the Bengals, the impact, the domino effect that he has had on the other defensive linemen on this team and just overall bolstering this pass rush for Seattle, it would have been a big loss if he was going to miss significant time. It remains to be seen, Rob, whether he's going to play against the Giants on Sunday, but Pete Carroll said today that his foot injury is not serious. They are hopeful that he's going to be able to play this weekend, and this is not dismissing the Giants. I think the Giants are going to be a tough game, even at home. This is a team that's playing good football. They got a good defense, but if he has to miss a game here, I'd much rather see him sit out a week to get healthy and come back for Week 14 than put him out there at, say, 80% and risk potentially having him injure that foot worse.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that with Carlos Dunlap, as you said, he's kind of the straw that stirs the drink as far as Seattle's pass rush goes. I mean, we've just seen such a huge improvement. And I don't think that's any type of coincidence, as we talked about many times before. And, you know, Pete Carroll was a little bit, he didn't have the details that he normally would after the game Monday night. And then, you know, even today, something on the bottom of his foot. I mean, that's not, quite as specific as Carroll at times has been in talking about injuries. But to me, you feel a lot better, because I think anybody who saw Dunlap kind of limping his way off the field this last game, you thought, uh-oh, this could be really significant. If Dunlap is back on the field for the Seahawks against the Giants, obviously that's that much better. But if he only misses one game, then I still think that you're feeling really good about where your defense is headed. And then if that wasn't all the only positive news that the Seahawks received, it sounds like Chris Carson, who I know there's a lot of people on social media who are questioning why, if Chris Carson's back, then how come Carlos Hyde was getting as many carries as he was? I think that based on what Carroll was saying today, that Carson was a little sore coming out of the game, but they don't expect him to have any issues and be ready to play on Sunday. I think that was more a reflection of the fact that they wanted to get Chris Carson back on the field, kind of ease him back into the rotation, so that way that he can be that bell cow, kind of like Carlos Dunlap down the stretch when you get closer to the playoffs.
And that's another situation. If Chris Carson's only getting 35-40% of the carries, I don't expect, if he's healthy, that that's going to happen again this weekend. I think the Seahawks are going to have to be able to run the ball some against a really solid Giants defense, but they're not going to say, oh, let's just give him 70% right now, when Carlos Hyde's ran the ball well, and they've got a couple other backs that they're confident in. Rashad Penny may be coming back soon as well, and so you don't want to get in a situation like you did last year where Chris Carson is banged up at the end of the season, then he can't help you in the playoffs. They need him in January football, and so they're going to be cautious, but they're still going to get him out on the field because he's an impact player, and we've seen what an impact it has on this offense when he's not available for them. Certainly Carlos Hyde has nullified that some, played really well against the Cardinals in their victory a couple weeks ago, but They want Chris Carson out there on the field so that he can contribute with his toughness. And he's just wired differently than most running backs in the league. That's the kind of back that they want to have running between the tackles with Pete Carroll's offense. The one injury that I don't know that I'm going to say I'm concerned about it, but we saw Shaquille Griffin have a hamstring tweak and he missed 4 games from it. Trey Flowers, according to Carroll, came out of Monday's game dealing with a minor hamstring issue. It is one worth monitoring. Carroll said they would see what things looked like today, but Quentin Dunbar is not eligible to come back until next week. It sounds like he's got a great chance to be activated immediately next week before they start preparing to play the Jets in week 14, but he can't play this week, and so DJ Reed would be the guy if somehow Trey Flowers can't play. And Flowers has been playing really good football the last few weeks, held the Eagles receivers to 3 receptions for 20 yards on Monday night. And so if he has to miss some significant time or even just miss one game given their injury situation at the corner position, again, it goes back to the chemistry and continuity issues that have plagued this secondary for much of the season. They're just now starting to get things rolling. Hopefully this is a minor tweak and maybe he misses one practice and he's back on the field and he's able to play on Sunday, because they certainly want to get him and Griffin both out there so the secondary is as close to full strength as possible.
No, you're exactly right there. I mean, that's the thing, is that Trey Flowers has been playing pretty well here lately. And so because he has created some positive momentum for himself, is playing with a great deal of confidence, because he's going to potentially be going up against a backup quarterback in Colt McCoy or potentially a little bit of an injured Daniel Jones, if he is in fact able to go through his own hamstring injury and be able to play for the Giants, then you do think that Trey Flowers would be able to continue his solid play against the Giants. And if he is unable to play, then I think that you're right in pointing out DJ Reed. And I think that this is a game where the Seahawks could be fortunate in that the Giants have some smaller, quicker receivers. They don't have a lot of big, tall, physical guys. So this might be a game where that, Reed might be a better play. Amadi might be a better play anyways, just because of their quickness advantage they have over Trey Flowers. The Giants just don't have the big, tall guys on the outside the way that the Eagles or some of the other teams that the Seahawks have faced in recent weeks.
When we come back for the second quarter, we're going to start transitioning to week 13. A solid Giants football team. Right now, they're in first place in the NFC East at 4-7, but they have won 3 straight games after a really rocky start to the season. This is a young football team that is playing better football. We're going to look at key matchups on both sides of the ball heading towards Sunday's matchup at Lumen Field. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. When it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment, of hitting your fitness goals, and feeling great about yourself. Echelon can get you there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their all-new Stride Smart Treadmill. No matter what your favorite fitness activity, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your home. Their world-class instructors will motivate you with thousands of daily live and on-demand studio-level classes, always available when you need them. And unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone, and one membership lets up to 5 family members all work out at the same time. Right now, you can try any Echelon fitness equipment at home for 30 days. Go to echelonfit.com/code, that's Echelon, fit.com/NFL. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. On tomorrow's show, it's Crossover Thursday. I'll be teaming up with Patricia Traina of Locked On Giants to get ready for our Week 13 matchup between the Seahawks and Giants at Lumen Field. To start discussing the game, as we do every Wednesday, we have to condense it a little bit because this is a tighter week with Monday Night Football happening and having a game coming up on Sunday. Not as many quarters to work with, but we're going to break down 3 key matchups on both sides of the football. And I mentioned it earlier in the show, Rob, this is a Giants team that has won 3 straight games, and 5 of their last 6 games, they have given up 22 or fewer points. And so I think it's fitting that we talk Seahawks offense against Giants defense first, because this is a very good Giants defense, and I think you and I both agree. We love defensive line play anyway, but there might not be a better trio of interior defensive linemen in the NFL than what the Giants have in Leonard Williams, Dexter Lawrence, and Dalvin Tomlinson.
Yeah, they are a big physical front, and it's going to be difficult for Seattle to run the ball. I think that's one of the reasons why they did want to try and ease Chris Carson onto the field last week against the Philadelphia. We talked so much about, you know, what a monster that Fletcher Cox was for the Eagles, and when we saw the Eagles be able to create that pass rush that really slowed down the Seahawks offense at times, the Giants have a similar defensive front, and that to me is one of the huge matchups in this game. Whether or not Ethan Posick or Mike Yapati or Damian Lewis, are going to be able to get that type of consistent push in the front or in the interior and be able to create those running lanes. To me, that's going to be the biggest question in this game. We know it's all about the ball when it comes with Pete Carroll. To me, it is going to be about the Seahawks offense going up against the Giants defense because let's face it. I mean, as you just said, the Giants have a three-game winning streak. They're playing good football right now. But from a pure talent standpoint, I think Seattle has a decided advantage. But because the Giants' defensive line is as stout as it is, then there could be the opportunity for turnovers forced. The Seahawks were fortunate in that they were able to escape Philadelphia without turning the ball over once. That was critical in their win. If they can do the same against the Giants, then I think they're going to have the same success.
Yeah, this is a front line. It's a little different situation than the Eagles where they've got a number of players that can get after the quarterback, and the Giants don't have a terrible pass rush necessarily, but these three guys that I mentioned, Williams, Lawrence, and Tomlinson, big bodies guys, Williams can be a factor in the pass rush. Lawrence is surprisingly good in that regard for his size. Tomlinson just a big run stuffer. These guys are going to be, it's going to be really tough to run between the tackles this game. I think the Seahawks are going to have to get their outside zone game going a little bit. And if they're not able to contain those guys in the middle, they can be a problem collapsing the pocket too. That's the type of defensive line that can wreck a game plan. And so to me, that is the biggest matchup for the Seahawks offensively. Can they handle that front with those three players? There are some areas that I think the Seahawks can exploit in this Giants defense. Jabril Peppers coming out of Michigan, I had questions, like a lot of people, about where he was going to fit from a positional standpoint. He's a good football player, but very aggressive, sometimes to a fault, and he has his limitations in coverage. I'm going to keep tooting this horn until the Seahawks actually listen to me. Get your darn tight ends involved in the offense, because I think if you get Jacob Hollister or Will Dissly working against Jabril Peppers in coverage, Peppers is a good athlete, a fantastic athlete. He can make plays in the football, but again, his aggression sometimes doesn't end up in the right spot. I think the Seahawks can have success moving the ball through the air with their tight ends in this football game. Might even be able to hit a couple routes down the seam against this defense, especially a player like Peppers. I think he can take advantage of that aggressiveness. We'll see if the Seahawks actually try to get their tight ends involved. As I said yesterday, that's been something that has really concerned me because I just think there's too much talent not to have those guys be more involved in your aerial attack.
Yeah, you know, Pete Carroll was asked today in Wednesday's press conference about Jamal Adams and what instinctive player he is, and you know, it's kind of comparing him to some of the safeties that Carroll has coached here in Seattle or in previous stops, and I thought that it was interesting that he kind of focused in on Adams' instincts, especially as well as obviously his athleticism and speed, all those different things. Peppers is a similarly instinctive player, and he has good straight line speed. He's a 4.4 guy, but at the same time, he does get caught peeking in the backfield at times, and so that's where you can take advantage of that. So I agree. I think one of the ways that you can attack that is the tight ends down the seams. I think it's if you are going to have the multiple receiver sets, then again, use those receivers in the middle of the field. It doesn't all have to be on the boundary deep to DK Metcalf or Tyler Lockett. But again, I think that kind of tying in the same thing, that is another advantage that the Seahawks have. If they can give Russell Wilson some time, again, I think that the Giants' strength of their defense is very much in that front. You look at the corners that they have on the outside, and James Bradbury, Isaac Yiadom, they're guys who are kind of long, lanky, physical, but they're not elite speed guys. And so, of course, DK Metcalf with his straight line speed, if we're going to see if Tyler Lockett was maybe just a little bit slow in that last game against Philadelphia, but might be able to turn on the afterburners in this game. But I do think if the Seahawks are able to hold up that defensive line, then there should be some big play opportunities in this game.
Bradbury's had a really solid first season. I thought that they overpaid for him coming from Carolina, but he's had a stellar first year with the Giants. That said, he has had his share of issues playing against the Seahawks in the past when he was in Carolina, including last year's game. He got torched a couple times when the Seahawks played in Carolina, and I believe DK Metcalf had a touchdown against him in that game. I'll have to double check on that. I'm sure that he did score with Bradbury in coverage against him. So you mentioned the lack of speed, and again, these guys are NFL corners. They can run, but compared to some of the guys the Seahawks have played, maybe not the most fleet of foot. I think this does play to the Seahawks receivers' advantage. Again, it comes back to, is the protection going to be there, particularly against those interior guys? This is a game, I thought the Eagles, obviously with Fletcher Cox, they have the ability to collapse the pocket, but they had players like Brandon Graham on the outside that really concerned me going into that game, especially without Brandon Shell playing at right tackle. In this game, it really is those monsters in the middle that really can muck things up when they're able to collapse the pocket, and that can create some problems for Russell Wilson. So we'll see if he has time. If he does, I like the matchups that are there potentially on the outside. Now let's flip to the other side of the coin. Seahawks defense that's been playing much better the last few games. Giants on offense, yes, they've won three straight games. This is not a high-octane offense, even with Daniel Jones available, and right now his status is very much up in the air going into this game. Colt McCoy was getting the reps today at practice for the Giants, the veteran out of Texas. Seattle has faced him before. He's a guy that can move the chains a little bit for you. He's a reliable backup, but certainly they're going to have to provide protection. And for me, you look at what the Giants do anyway, even without Saquon Barkley, who's out for the year with a torn ACL, even more than they've done in previous games, I think they're going to lean on that ground game with Wayne Gallman, Alfred Morris, and Deion Lewis. They got three backs there that offer slightly different styles. They'll mix and match them. And so I've got those running backs going against Seahawks linebackers. I think this is a big game for players like Jordan Brooks and Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright. Set the tone and make this a one-dimensional offense, potentially with a backup quarterback. That's a great recipe playing on your home field.
It absolutely is. I think that's what the Giants are going to have to try and do. And let's be clear. I mean, the Giants offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett, former Dallas Cowboys head coach. Garrett is a terrific play caller. Joe Judge is a terrific coach as well. So I really think that the Giants are going to come into this game very well prepared. I think that is a mistake to just dismiss this club just because they don't have Saquon Barkley. They potentially don't have Daniel Jones. Colt McCoy is, as you mentioned, Corbin, is a veteran, and so he recognizes this opportunity, and so if Seattle kind of sleepwalks into this game, then they could pay a huge price for that, because the Giants do have some explosive playmakers on the outside. But I think that, again, it's going to come down to, can Seattle make this team, can make the Giants one-dimensional? If you can slow down that running game, then you can do that, because Colt McCoy, kind of like Daniel Jones, doesn't have that elite arm strength to be able to throw the ball on a tight line 20 yards down the field. He is going to rely on his mobility. He's going to rely on his instincts and his ability to loft the ball over the top. So if Seattle can slow down the running back who I expect to be the Giants' kind of bell cow in this game, Wayne Gallman, then I think they really do have a chance of being very successful in this game. But it is worth noting that of the Giants only have 10 rushing touchdowns, and Gallman has six of them. He is among the players who has been playing very well for the Giants down the stretch.
Yeah, he's playing the best football of his career since he came out of Clemson, and he's really taken advantage of having extra reps with Barkley being out. I think this is another game. It feels similar to last week, even though these guys are listed as starters, and they have been all season. Andrew Thomas, a high first-round pick for the Giants out of Georgia. It's been an up-and-down rookie season for him. Doesn't have great Pro Football Focus grades. Maybe has picked his game up a little bit here the last few weeks. Cameron Fleming on the other side is a journeyman who's played for a number of different teams. He has played a lot of games. He started a number of games in New England with the Cowboys. He played some significant snaps. So those two guys, they have, on one side, you have a very high upside tackle in Thomas that is still trying to figure things out at the NFL level, and a guy like Fleming that has started a lot of games, nothing spectacular about him, but this still looks to me like a game. Carlos Dunlap, Rasheem Green, who played really well against the Eagles, Alton Robinson, I'd like to see him be a little bit more involved, had kind of a quiet game on Monday, and of course, LJ Collier, who continues to have a very strong season. I think any one of those defensive ends in this game could have an opportunity to exploit those two tackles. Bengals because, quite frankly, I just haven't been impressed with a couple games worth of film that I've watched. I think on the outside, the Seahawks can wreak havoc getting after either McCoy or a hobbled Daniel Jones that isn't going to be running like normal.
Yeah, exactly. I think that this is basically the opposite of the way that the Seahawks match up with the Giants on the other side of the ball. You know, Seattle's edge pressure, I think, is going to be critical in this game. And so for the exact reasons that you just mentioned, and the as high of a first-round pick as Andrew Thomas was, he is still a rookie, and he is a guy who has had, you know, kind of taken his lumps so far. He's a player that when he's coming out of Georgia, I compare him to former longtime Seahawks left tackle Russell Okung, in that he does not have elite feet for a left tackle. He's got good feet, but what his game is his size, is his strength. And so if you were able to unleash some of Seattle's better speed rushers. So I would mention Benson Maoya in this equation as well. I do think that you might be able to see the Seahawks be able to kind of continue this very encouraging upward trend in the sack department.
And you already touched on this, the playmakers. The Giants have some really solid receivers. Their number one guy, Darius Slayton, is having a pretty good season. Only has three touchdowns, but good reception and yardage total numbers. Evan Engram is an athletic tight end that can go out, play slot, catch passes for you, and he's given the Seahawks some problems in prior matchups. And of course, Golden Tate, Seahawk fans know very well from his time on the team, including the Super Bowl season, still a very solid NFL receiver as he starts to get into the twilight of his career, and of course, Sterling Shepard as well. So they've got a number of playmakers here. Shaquille Griffin, Trey Flowers if he's healthy, DJ Reed, Ugo Amadi. If the Seahawks are able to get pressure on Colt McCoy, then that can maybe mitigate this. But this certainly seems like a game where the Eagles didn't have the weapons. The Giants have some very capable receivers that could cause the Seahawks secondary some problems, particularly in the intermediate game.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because you look at the Giants, and I was just kind of criticizing at least slightly that some of the Giants cornerbacks for their lack of straight line speed. And, you know, part of that is because they lost the first round pick a couple of years ago, DeAndre Baker, to the same type of issues that the Seahawks were facing with Quentin Dunbar. Everybody will kind of remember that whole case. But rather than kind of go down that rabbit hole, focusing in again on the Giants wide receivers, Darius Slayton can flat fly. I mean, he is a legitimate burner. At the same time, I mentioned the word burner because that's kind of who he reminded me of, is another former Seahawk, Daryl Turner, in that he can absolutely take it to the house. He also drops way too many footballs. With Daniel Jones throwing him the ball, Jones had targeted him 66 times. They only completed 38 of them. And that's a pretty low number, but it does reflect the type of player that Slayton is. He's a big guy, a big play guy over the top. You hope that Shaquille Griffin will be able to handle that type of coverage. And then again, with some of the smaller, quicker receivers, Golden Tate isn't, he's short, but he's not small. Everybody knows what a physical player that he is. Sterling Shepard is also a pretty dynamic weapon as well. But then Evan Engram is the one that I think that you're, you know, just nails in mentioning him because of his versatility, because of his speed. There's just not many guys who are 245, 250 pounds that are running in the high 4.3s, low 4.4s the way that Evan Engram did. So this is a guy who does have that type of breakaway speed. We talked about before with, I think the Seahawks can take advantage of Jabril Peppers' instincts or aggressiveness, I guess I should say. Definitely the Giants are going to be looking to take advantage of the Seattle's aggressiveness with their safeties play by trying to focus on Engram down the seam as well.
When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to put a bow on Monday's game in Philadelphia with defensive takeaways. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As an avid weightlifter and distance runner, I'm always looking for an edge when it comes to nutrition, seeking delicious, healthy protein bars without the crazy additives. Since being diagnosed with celiac disease, my options have been pretty limited. Until now. Enter in the Built Bar, a low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, gluten-free protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Built Bar now comes in 18 mouth-watering flavors, including 6 new delicious flavors such as caramel brownie and cookies and cream. My all-time favorite is peanut butter brownie, which is 20 grams of protein, just 3 grams of sugar, and 3 grams of net carbs. Since I had my first Built Bar, I never go without one when I hit the weight room or go for a jog. All Built Bars are 100% chocolate, nut and gluten-free, soft and easy to chew, and don't have the nasty aftertaste of competing protein bars. Sound too good to be true? Go to BuiltBar.com and build your own custom box with your choice of flavors using the code LOCKEDON for $10 off. So what are you waiting for? Change your workout game by going to BuiltBar.com and entering code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday show, Rob Rang. Friendly reminder, tomorrow I'll be joining Patricia Traina of Locked On Giants, and we will continue dissecting this upcoming matchup at Lumen Field between the Seahawks and the Giants on our weekly crossover special. Let's get to defensive takeaways. Put a bow on this game from Monday night. Seahawks winning 23-17 over the Eagles. Another game where they dominated on the defensive side of the football, gave up just 17 points. And I think starting with the good, really this whole segment should be good, but we have a couple little things that we'll throw in there being nitpicky about. But you have to start with the way Seattle opened this football game. Five straight three and out possessions. I mean, still reading that, I'm just like, this Seahawks defense had five straight three and outs, and some of it was because the Eagles' offensive ineptitude. They missed on some opportunities. Carson Wentz missed some open receivers. But nonetheless, the other team's got to execute, and they didn't. The Seahawks did, and they were able to have a bunch of really quick possessions to really set the tone in this game, even with the offense coming out flat out of the gate.
Yeah, the Eagles did come flat out of the gate, and that absolutely contributed to it. But at the same time, you know, Seattle's ability to create pressure, I think that was a big part of that as well. And so that's one of the reasons why I think that they can have some success this week against the Giants. To me, one of the huge takeaways is the fact that it just felt like the Eagles' two touchdowns in that game, obviously the first one coming in just a couple of seconds to go in the first half, and the other one happening in the very, very end of the game on a pretty fluke Hail Mary deflected reception. But still, the fact that the Seahawks went on the road and only allowed two touchdowns, and both of them in the last 30 seconds of the respective halves, to me just kind of emphasizes how physically dominant they were in that game. And again, I mentioned this before, I think that the Eagles are actually a more gifted team than the Giants. So if Seattle is able to play with that same type of physicality and intensity, then I think that they should be able to have some similar success against the Giants as well.
I have to start with the defensive line here, and we're looking at individual position groups because this was one of the big matchups we talked about. The Eagles had a bunch of offensive linemen missing, two backup tackles and backup guards. The only starter that they really had, Jason Peters was a starter, but he was playing at tackle. They moved him into guard because he's dealing with a foot injury. And then you have Kelsey at center. Jason Kelsey, and he's a very solid center, but the rest of the offensive line was banged up, and the Seahawks did what they needed to do. They came in, the front four was able to get consistent pressure early on and throughout the game on Carson Wentz, and with him struggling already coming into this game, it really created issues for the Eagles' offense. That was a big part of those three and outs, is that Carson Wentz didn't have much time to get rid of the football. They were capitalizing on that offensive line, and I'm going to mention the guy I did a film breakdown on this morning because I was rewatching this game on all 22, and Puna Ford, just every single play that he's in, does something that I just go, wow, this guy has really turned it on. He's been doing this for the last three or four games. And yes, he was going to get some backup linemen, but most of his matchups were against Kelsey, who, again, I think is one of the better centers in the NFL. He's been put in a tough spot with the players around him, but Puna Ford was beating him a lot of the night against Philadelphia. And so for him to come out and get three quarterback hits, I had him down with five pressures on Carson Wentz. He had a sack. He was extremely disruptive. There was a play, I mentioned this in the film breakdown, it looked like Miles Sanders was a crash test dummy running into a wall, and the wall was Puna Ford. He got hit right at the line of scrimmage, and he's just suddenly stopped. There was no more progress that was going to be made there. And so the Great Wall of Puna shut down the Eagles' run game, too. He just had a fantastic game. LJ Collier had a couple really nice plays again. Carlos Dunlap had another partial sack. Jaron Reed was all over the place. So this defensive line came to play, and they took advantage of the matchup they had. That was something we talked about. You still got to play the game. The Seahawks went out, at least from a defensive line standpoint, and did just that.
They really did. And again, that's one of the reasons why I think that the Seahawks fans should be really excited and feel confident that that Seattle will be able to kind of duplicate that success, because the Giants' offensive line has not had the same injury issues as Philadelphia's, but At the same time, I just don't know if they're quite as talented, especially in the interior. I really like Will Hernandez and Kevin Zeitler, and I'm a big fan of the rookie Shane Lemieux as well. But at the same time, at the center position with Nick Gates, with Spencer Pulley, you're talking about some, kind of journeyman centers that frankly, Apuna Ford and Jaron Reed and LJ Collier are having the types of games that they've had recently, especially, as you mentioned, with Rasheem Green kind of coming back and playing pretty well. Also, I think that Seattle's defensive line really is starting to kind of come into its own right at the exact right time. And again, the other things as far as takeaways from the game against the Eagles that really jumped out to me is the fact that Seattle was as dominant as they were in shutting down the Eagles' top playmakers. I mean, we talk so much about like Jalen Reagor or John Hightower, their ability to stretch the field. That forced Carson Wentz to just check the ball down to his tight ends, check the ball down to his running back. So it really was impressive that that Seattle was basically able to eliminate any possibility of the Eagles creating big plays. And if you force the quarterback and an offensive line that is struggling with injuries as much as the Eagles were, then it's going to be that much more difficult for them to march their way all the way down the field. And that's something, again, the Seahawks deserve a lot of credit on being able to do.
Yeah, they held Philadelphia's receivers as a whole under 50 yards receiving for the night. So it was a fantastic effort. And again, some of that goes down on the Eagles, their situation. They have just not been able to create separation with their receivers. Picks that they've made, like J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, have not panned out. Jalen Reagor has had a disappointing rookie season for the most part. He was injured for a good chunk of the year. Hasn't been able to get that chemistry going with Carson Wentz. But give the secondary their due, because the game before, they basically shut down DeAndre Hopkins, and Christian Kirk for most of the game was held in check. Larry Fitzgerald didn't do a ton in that game. That's a really good receiving core in the Seahawks secondary, and that was without Shaquille Griffin. Came in and played really well, and so for them to go out and pitch another really good game like this, Trey Flowers played really well. Griffin had a nice game back. He did give up a touchdown to Dallas Goedert, but otherwise, a very good first game back from his injury. So it's like Jamal Adams said last week, if the front line can't eat, then the secondary can't eat, something along those lines. And the front line was eating, so the secondary was able to eat. And speaking of Jamal Adams, he's got to be the other thing I'm mentioning here. Yes, he missed some tackles, so that would be on the bad section for me. There were a few missed tackles in that game that he's got to clean up, but he played easily his best game as a Seahawk, and he was all over Carson Wentz. He was blowing up plays in the backfield with running backs, shooting all over the field. He was the playmaker the Seahawks thought he was going to be. Just seemed like he was in on every play in this football game. He and Puna Ford were the two players that just kept jumping off the film to me in this game from start to finish. And so that's really good news that his shoulder's feeling good. He's healthy. He's making the impact the Seahawks thought he was going to make when they traded two first-round picks for him.
You know, the plays that really jumped out to me, Corbin, with Jamal Adams, is not the sacks, and it's not the, some of the dynamic plays that he makes in coverage. It's just the toughness that he showed. I'm happy that you mentioned about, like, the shoulder feeling better and things like that. There were a couple of plays where Jamal Adams would come in there, and he would take on the lead blockers, the guards, the fullbacks that Philadelphia was kind of throwing at him. And to me, that is showing a guy who is truly playing with reckless abandon, who is willing to throw his body into the fray to allow his teammates to make plays. Yeah, exactly, that he's bought in. And that would have been one of the concerns that I certainly had, and that some of the guys that I know in the NFL who are kind of watching all of these games, that they were thinking is maybe Jamal Adams wasn't buying in. But what we've seen over the last couple of weeks is that if there was any question about Adams buying in, about his health, any of that certainly has evaporated here in these last couple of games. But you touched on the missed tackles. Again, I don't think that the Eagles are particularly the Giants are a particularly talented team for at least some of their players, unless Seattle makes a mistake, unless they turn the ball over, or unless the Giants are able to break some tackles and be able to create the big gashing types of plays. So that is something that definitely would be my only bad, I think, for Seattle's defense. And the only other thing I would acknowledge is that both touchdowns that Seattle did allow were to the tight end. hands. To Goddard, as you mentioned, to Richard Rodgers on the deflection. And you could argue that both of those were a little bit fluky, but at the same time, when you have a talent like Evan Ingram, and you have a quarterback like Colt McCoy, who I think is also going to have to try to rely on his backs and tight ends, little dump off passes, then the tackling does have to be cleaner.
It absolutely does. The other thing that I had down in my bad was the defensive pass interferences. And one of them against Jordan Brooks, I hate it because I don't even think he was necessarily impeding the receiver, but he didn't turn to look at the ball. So that's going to get called every single time. And then, of course, Shaquille Griffin had one as well. I don't know if that one, I think he should have been called for defensive pass interference earlier in the game, and it wasn't called. So maybe that was a makeup call, but certainly I'm nitpicking. A few missed tackles, a couple defensive pass interferences, as you mentioned, the touchdowns to the tight ends, untimely late half points. That's certainly something that worries me. The only thing that I have down for ugly isn't even the Seahawks' fault. It was before that first touchdown, but this, I don't know why, but this is still bothering me. And we're now a couple days removed from the game, but how did the line judge not throw a flag for intentional grounding when Carson Wentz basically was a mile short of getting the football back to the line of scrimmage? I mean, it was atrocious. If that's not an intentional grounding call, those of you that watch the game, the play I'm talking about, the snap went over Carson Wentz's head, went back about 15 yards. Carlos Dunlap was very close to getting the sack for like a 25, 30-yard loss. Wentz chucked it away towards the sideline, and he was outside the tackle box, so from that standpoint, it wasn't grounding, but you have to get the ball back to the line of scrimmage, and it was blatantly obvious that he wasn't even the same zip code as the line of scrimmage. And so to me, this isn't the Seahawks' fault, but this is just one of those, the officiating crew, the people that are in charge of, evaluating the calls that are made on the field, that's got to be a huge red flag on them, because that was one of the worst missed calls that I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, a missed call, I think, is a good way of putting it. Another one would be a mercy rule. I mean, that's what it felt like. It was. It was just a blatantly missed call. The Eagles just had a huge mistake. Wentz, the ball clearly did not get to the line of scrimmage. It should have been intentional grounding. I have no explanation for why they didn't call that penalty or basically Carlos Dunlap give him the sack, because, to me, that was a play where the Seahawks dominated. It was kind of a representative of the entire game.
It was, and it really was a game-changing play, because the Eagles were able to go down and then get a touchdown right before the half, and so it's a 14-6 game instead of being 14-0 with the Seahawks getting the ball first. Obviously, Seattle was still in control, but it really made a game that felt like it was 25-30-0. It's suddenly like, this is an 8-point game, and so that was a really huge play, especially with the intentional grounding they called on Russell Wilson a few minutes earlier. If that play was intentional grounding, then this one absolutely, I mean, it was textbook. It had to be called. And so I don't really think there were any things that were ugly from the way Seattle played defensively. It just would have been nice to see that call made the way that it was supposed to be. I mean, you're going to have your hit and miss calls. That is not one of them. That one was blatantly obvious. So I could vent about that play. I was sitting watching him just like, I don't care if this was done against Russell Wilson and they didn't call that. I'd be sitting here like, what is wrong with you? And they just didn't call it. And I know Pete Carroll was fuming. He almost looked like Bruce Arians with his face turning red over there under his mask. He was clearly upset, and he had every right to be with that missed call. But nonetheless, it was a dominant defensive performance. Third straight week, the Seahawks, at least the second half against the Rams, and then the last two games, they've really been firing on all cylinders, and this group just keeps playing better. The defensive line, getting everything started, the secondary, the chemistry is building, the trust is building there with that group, and they have a chance to get even better when Dunbar comes back here in the next week or two. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, whatever your preferred podcast platform is. It's easy. Just go to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Click on the platform you want to listen to, and you can download our shows every day for free. Tomorrow is going to be our Crossover Thursday special. I'll be joining Patricia Traina of Locked On Giants to continue diving in to this upcoming Week 13 matchup at Lumen Field. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Go Hawks.